notice you don't have a resolution on the board. What's yours?
I want to do a cartwheel, but real casual, like, not make a big deal out of it. But I know everybody saw it. There's one stunning, gorgeous cartwheel.
How's it going?
I'm having a little trouble motivating.
One, two, three. I did it. I did a cartwheel.
You.
God.
Okay, and are you ready for the show?
Yay, we're ready, Lucy. Please start.
And so I started.
This is Mayor Rick Kreisman, and you're listening to the Homemade Broadcast.
Personnel, this is CVTS. Space vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Will the soundtrack kindly produce a sound? Go on, don't be nervous. Go ahead. Any sound? Well, that isn't quite what I had in mind.
It is the Homemade Broadcast, HMB Radio on RadioSaintPete.com. My name is Will Kuhn. So very happy to be with you. Da do 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 bee ba boo. Ba ba bee ba boo. Happy New Year, everybody. It is New Year's Eve, 2016, the end of a great year. A lot of people hated this year. I had a great time. 2016 was friggin' awesome. Couldn't ask for much more, frankly, out of this year. I hope yours was as pleasant as mine. And if it wasn't, hey, we're 2017's around the corner. The Earth has moved one time around the sun, and nothing is different otherwise. But hey, I know some people are into New Year's, and it's an exciting time for many folks. So yes, Happy New Year to you. I was going to take this week off, but we took Christmas off, so I figured, you know, since this show is being played on New Year's this year, or New Year's Eve, I should say, why not do a best of the worst of the Homemade Broadcast in 2016? We had some great guests this year, some great local talent that's around the Tampa Bay area, and we even had a few bigger names swing by. So we're going to play some best of the worst going into this year, old interviews from 2016 as we gear up for 2017. First, thank you to Slybar very much for sponsoring this program. I could totally do this without you guys, but I'm glad I don't have to. I'm glad that you are helping out and supporting this program and, supporting the arts here in Tampa. Joe and Lauren, really good guys. And I appreciate them very much. 2061 Central Avenue here in St. Petersburg, Florida. Go see them. They got food. They got drinks. They got the whole thing. What more could you want? And then slybar.com, I believe, is their website. And, yeah, check them out. Good stuff. And also my dear friend, Chrissy Parker at truevsalonandspa.com, 8908 4th Street North, Unit B. Right here in St. Pete. Make an appointment, 727-329-9751. Truvy Salon and Spa, Truvy, T-R-U-V-Y, salonandspa.com. Thank you, folks, for supporting this broadcast. And, appreciate it. Maybe you want to become a sponsor of this podcast. Maybe you said, I'm going to give this a shot. It's cheap. I mean, I know it's not cheap. Anything now is expensive, but, maybe you're interested. And I encourage you to do that. You can email me at thehomemadebroadcast@radiosaintpete.com, or you can call or text at 813-693-2124. Even if you just want to leave a message, say hello, say Happy New Year, be happy to get those messages. Make sure you like the Facebook page. Facebook.com/HMB Radio and follow Radio St. Pete too. Radio St. Pete, STPETE on Facebook. We got lots of good stuff on there. Keep up with all the local programming we have here going on at Radio St. Pete. And on Twitter, Instagram, all that, you can find me at home_made_man. Easy enough. And then Radio St. Pete. It's just Radio St. Pete, all one word. So Happy New Year, everybody. Let's get into some best of the worst of 2016. So earlier this year, we had J.B. Smoove from Curb Your Enthusiasm, hilarious stand-up comic, called in, gave me some life advice, some love advice. So let's talk to, or revisit, I should say, my man J.B. Smoove.
What's up, brother? I'm doing good.
I'm a little...
How's the weather out there?
It's hot already here, man. I can't believe it. It's about 80 degrees. I would probably hit 85 today.
Sweet. By the time I get this, it'll be about 95. I'm bringing the heat, baby.
Oh, I hope not. It's too soon, man. I'm a heavy guy. I sweat standing up, so I'm already having a tough time. I went to a concert last night, and I'm 31 years old, and I can't drink on a Wednesday anymore. It was a bad mistake, so I woke up with a little bit of hangover today, and then also I had to ravage my closet to try to find a green shirt since it's St. Patrick's Day. I don't have any green shirts.
You have no green shirts? What?
I know. I don't know why.
You have at least one green shirt.
I did find one in the back of my closet.
You found one, see?
So, JB...
You have to be prepared for every holiday. You should be prepared for every holiday. You should always have a Christmas sweater laying around.
Right.
Always. Always have that kind of stuff, man. Always have a St. Patty's Day shirt.
Well,
always have all the essentials.
Yeah, I found one, luckily. But, JB, you're going to be here Saturday, March 26th at the Mahaffey Theater. You can purchase tickets at themahaffey.com. Have you ever been to Tampa Bay?
I've been to Tampa before, man. I love Tampa, man. It's a great city. Yeah, I've been to Tampa a few times, man. I mean, I haven't been recently. I'm looking forward to seeing what's happening with the city, what's going on. I haven't been there in a while. I'm looking forward to a little tour, maybe.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah, yeah. It's an interesting place to be. I like it, but I think that's because I live here and I haven't been anywhere else. So I don't really know what to compare it to.
You got
to
get out and about, brother. You got to get out and about.
I got to make some money first, man.
Make some money. Get out and about. See the world, man. I'm telling you.
What is your advice?
It's so beautiful there.
What is your advice for a young man like me who's 31? You're supposed to be broke at 31, I think. But what is your advice for somebody, for me, to get out there and make some money?
No, you should not be broke at 31. You gotta catch up, brother. You gotta catch up.
What do I gotta do?
31 years old, you should have something in your brain that's gonna kick in. It's gonna kick in sooner or later. You know, but a lot of times a lady will end up, you got a lady?
Kinda, I don't know.
Kinda? Okay, here's what's gonna happen. Even if you're not, so you got a lady. She's a lady. Now, she got to kick it in for you. Most times, ladies get guys going. You know what I'm saying? She'll have interest. She's going to pull you into her world. You got to be comfortable with her, you know, sexually, relationship-wise, buddy-buddy. Everything got to work for you to progress at 31 years old. It's time to change gears. Ladies normally change gears for guys. Okay? So she got to kick in. You got to kick in. If you plan on being together, it's going to kick in eventually, and you'll have success. But you need a backbone. Your backbone ain't kicking you in yet. You too relaxed. You got to shake it up a little bit. You got to put some schedule on you of when things are supposed to happen. You know, certain things are just on a schedule. You know what I mean? And she got to kick it in for you. Guys can't do it on their own sometimes. You know. You'll get it together.
I think I've been listening to too much Patrice O'Neal clips on Opie and Anthony. I'm just so disheartened with women.
Yeah, man, you got to find one that's going to help you. You know what I mean? If she can't help you, she got to go. I'm not saying get rid of her right now, but I'm saying
if
she can't help you in your business and you guys aren't progressing together, and she ain't helping you, if she's in the way, she got to go. That's it.
See, the advice I heard was at this age, like it's getting to the point where I got to settle down soon, I guess, you know, in the next few years. But right now you're supposed to have a spare and a pair is the old phrase that I've heard.
If you ain't got a spare and a pair, you are not ready to bring someone else into your jacked up world. You know what I mean? Don't. It's like a homeless guy with a dog. That dog like him, but that dog would rather be in the house somewhere, warm, getting fed a nice meal every night. You know, cuddling up on someone's couch in front of the fireplace with a owner who has a house. He would rather that.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, people go through stuff, but don't drag everybody else with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I always felt that was cruel when homeless people have dogs. That is very cruel of them.
Yeah, the dog is cold too. You know what I mean? Find someone could take care of that dog until you get on your feet. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying you shouldn't be with your companion. And your dog is, you know, your dog is your man's best friend. But damn, a friend can only go so far. You know what I'm saying? So at this age and time, it's time to kick it in. You know what I mean? You got to kick it in.
Well, I recently found this passion for radio, and unfortunately, radio does not pay very well. I'm finding.
But literally, right now, see, you use the word find. You found a place, a job. Now, is this job your passion? If it's not your passion, you're just there for a minute. If this is not your passion, you're wasting more time. You know what I'm saying? Put time into your passion. Don't put so much time into something you really don't want to do. If you don't want to do it, get out the damn way.
No, I
someone
love
else to have that blessing.
I love doing
you love
this.
It?
This is fantastic.
If you love doing it, you're going to have to ride it out.
Yeah. Well, they say
you gotta
the money.
Ride it out.
The
you got
to
ride it out then. Ride it out.
The money will come. That's what I hear. I also run a room. I run a stand-up comedy open mic here down here in St. Pete. How long have you been doing comedy for?
Man, I've been doing comedy almost 30 years, brother. Almost 30 years I've been doing this.
How old are you?
So for me, man, I just turned 50, brother.
Holy moly, did you really?
I just turned 50 December 16th,
I thought you were like 35.
I am 35. See what I mean? This is going reverting. Now we're going to revert back to what we just talked about a little while ago. I just turned 50. I look 35, right? My stress level is low. I'm having a good time. I'm enjoying myself. I got a great lady. I got a beautiful daughter. I got a great mama. I got all these great pieces. See what I mean?
Yeah.
These pieces don't go to work for me. These pieces can't do it, but they support what you're trying to do. You know what I'm saying? So when you support what you're trying to do, you will progress and things will start to work. That's what I'm trying to tell you, brother.
Yeah.
I don't want to give you all my tricks for the trade, but you got to start somewhere.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. But it hasn't always been easy, though. I'm sure there's been some bumps in the road. I know you wrote at Saturday Night Live, and that wasn't a pleasant experience.
It wasn't. I can't say it wasn't a pleasant experience, but I can say that, you know, it was definitely a stepping stone, and it helps. Stepping stones are there to help you in your journey. You know what I mean? My journey, it just had to go through there. There's nothing wrong with SNL. I, you know what? I didn't get as much stuff on air as I wanted to, but hey, that builds character. It lets me know that everything is not going to be handed to you. I don't like things handed to me. I'm a worker.
Right.
My thing. I don't want you to give me nothing. You don't got to give me a damn thing. Either you like it, what I wrote, or you don't like it. That's it. There is no, I should have got this on. There is none of that for me. I don't complain. I just do what I got to do. If you love it, you love it. I want a genuine love for everything I do. I don't want half-ass stuff.
Right.
That's
right.
Just me. You know what I mean? You work for what you got. Everything I got, I work for. I don't want no favors. You know what I mean? I give favors.
Yeah,
I don't ask for favors.
Totally, man.
That's my motto.
That's
my motto.
That's a positive attitude to have, man. That's what you got to do. You got to work hard, keep your nose to the grind wheel, or whatever that saying is. You got to work with Louis C.K. on Pootie Tang back in 2001, right?
Sarate, my man, Damien. Sarate. You know what I mean? But then I also worked on maybe five of Louis' projects.
Oh, really? You were in the show, too. You were in Louis' show.
Man, I've done so many things with Louis. You know, we always end up running into each other. Me and Louis worked together on so many cool things, you know? His first show, his first movie he ever did was called Tomorrow Night. I was in Tomorrow Night. He shot that in black and white, man. He shot in the early 90s.
Yeah. I saw some of didn't he release that recently on his website?
He released it. Yeah, he released it. You know what I mean? So these are, you know, I've been on maybe five of his projects. And we ran into each other again on the Chris Rock show. Ran into each other again on Cedric the Entertainer Presents. So these are all like, you know, you build relationships first. And then those relationships will get in contact with you later. You know, it's kind of like just building relationships, man. And your work comes from that. be a product of your work. Like right now, we know each other, right?
Yeah,
we're working together right now.
Best friends, as far as I'm concerned.
Later on, I might mess around and need you. You're a nice guy. I'm a nice guy. That's what happens later on. I give you a call 10 years from now. It don't matter if I call you tomorrow or 10 years from now. That's a damn relationship that we have built already. I trust you. I like you. You know, you're a great interviewer. I like what you're trying to do. You know what I mean? I'm helping you get rid of your lady and get you a new lady. You know what I'm saying? I'm doing things for you.
Oh, you're a good man, JB. I love you already.
I'm trying to help you. You know what I mean?
I appreciate it. I need all the help I can get, believe me.
But that's all it is. You know, all these building blocks, man, I'm going through, you know, of course it wasn't easy all the time. But I got lucky, you know. I had patience. Patience is something else. Now, patience is a whole other thing.
Sure.
Patience will help you get through anything. You know, that's one of the things you got to, as a young person, as a young guy like yourself, have patience in what you're trying to do and know what you're trying to do. Once you know what you're trying to do, can't nothing stop you from doing it. Stop yourself.
Yeah, and I kind of have that mentality now. Like, I don't really worry about anything. Like, I'm really focused. I work hard. And I know I don't want to have that moment when I'm on my deathbed or something, being like, man, and what if I would have done this, if I would have tried a little harder?
You don't want that, man. That's the last thing you want, is to blame yourself for something you didn't do. You know, you should never get to that point, brother. I promise you.
Yeah, and I won't. You know? I'm not going to do that. That's why I'm stoked. Yeah. I was always kind of a late bloomer, I think, in general in life. So I didn't really come to this realization until my late 20s. I don't think you become a whole human being until you're about 26 years old. All the synapses in your brain finally form. Some people figure it out early, but those are unicorns, you know. But I finally figured it out, and I started working hard, and things started happening.
You're good then. See, it don't matter when you do it, as long as you do it. You know, I was a late bloomer. I mean, I had several jobs. If you ever heard me on the Howard Stern show, you know I had several jobs.
Right.
Jobs, I had crazy jobs. So it don't matter. I've sold fire extinguishers door to door. I worked in a perfume factory. I worked in a warehouse. I worked in a mail order company. I've done everything, brother. I've driven a truck. I made deliveries. I've done like 10 different jobs in my life.
Yeah, but it builds character.
My passion. The word passion kicks in sometimes. My passion came through.
Right.
Now, my passion is, no, it don't matter. Now, my passion, it doesn't matter if my passion started at 25 or 31. It doesn't matter. Your passion is your passion.
Yeah,
your passion should always be with you.
Once you find it.
While you packing boxes, while you cleaning toilets or packing boxes, your passion's still in the back of your head.
Oh, totally.
You know what I mean? It's
totally.
It's on your mind the whole time. Your passion's on your mind.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter. You're making donuts. It don't matter. You're making donuts. The passion's on your damn mind while you're making them damn donuts.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It don't matter.
You know what I notice about, and I don't want to sound like a cranky old young man at 31 years old, but the younger kids, mm-hmm. like the lady at that I know, her grandson wants to be a musician. He's 18 uh-huh. years old. Does not work. He's just putting all his time into his music. And I told her, I was like, even Eminem, right? He worked in the GM factory. I don't know what it is about the younger kids, but it seems like they're very entitled now.
No, you got to work, man. You work to build character. You work to build your network of people. Hey, you go to work every day, and people like you as a regular person, guess what? They're going to come and see you perform. They're going to support you because, damn, he worked right next to me all these years. The guy's good. He can play a damn good guitar. You know what I mean? He's always humming music. All that stuff is building blocks, man. You got to get a regular damn job. Work.
Yeah,
you put everything into it, but that don't mean you got to stop providing and building and meeting people and doing different things. You know, no one's saying you have to stop everything else, but you should definitely have a regular job to support yourself.
Yeah, you know? I totally agree, but I don't know where the I seem to notice it a lot. I don't know what it is about. I feel like I said, I don't want to complain about the younger generation, and I'm one of those geriatric millennials. I'm right on that verge and the generation gap thing.
I'll complain for you. Don't worry about it. I'll complain for you.
Good. I need it. I feel like I'm getting good practice to be the grumpy old man. I'm getting really good at it already.
Man, these kids, man. You still have to, you know, doesn't matter. You know, it's still your passion, man. Your passion's your passion. Passion don't go nowhere. Well, if you're sitting there being supported, if your passion being supported by your parents and you don't know how to handle your money, By the time your passion comes to life and you start making money, you ain't gonna know what to do with it. You ain't know how to handle your money. You ain't gonna worry. You ain't gonna know how to deal with people. You ain't gonna learn how to do nothing. You're gonna sit there and people are gonna hate you. They're gonna hate you and you're gonna be a different kind of person because you're not used to being around people, working environment. You don't know how to handle money yet. You're gonna get all that stuff at one time. That's when you crash. You crash when you get it all at one time. You know what I mean?
Right.
He may have success one day, but he's gonna have to learn how to deal with people, his money, a lot of little things, little intangibles that you don't think about until after you get there. His intangibles are gonna be messed up.
Yeah. Well, he better hope that he's successful because he has no. Not that you should have a plan B. You don't have to have a plan B, but you have to not be a bum either.
Don't be a bum. Don't lean on people until you make it. Don't lean on people until you make it. Because if you don't make it, you're going to try to blame the people because they didn't put enough into you. You know what I mean? You can't blame nobody else.
Yeah, you have to invest in yourself, man. You have to have some self-worth.
You better invest in yourself. You better build character. I always say that. Build character. Character is something else, brother. You build your character, you cannot go wrong.
That's right. It's a fact.
Build character, brother.
JB, you're on one of my favorite shows of all time, Curb Your Enthusiasm. How did you hook up with Larry David?
Oh, man, that was a long process right there. That's a long story, man. It's a great story, but it's a long story. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, I was a big fan of the show before I got on the show. And, you know, things just kind of, you know, that's that thing we talked about earlier, that little patience thing, you know, that patience thing kicks in where you get a chance to do something you always wanted to do and you love something you throw it to the universe and somehow you end up, it ends up coming to light. But it ends up coming to light.
All right, there we go. JB giving me some good life advice, really setting things in perspective for me. Good to talk to that guy. Best friends, me and that guy. At the end of the interview, I said, yeah, let's hang out, dude. Let's go grab a drink. Give me a shout. He did not give me a shout. But it was still cool, really cool talking to him. So thank you for coming on the program in 2016 on this Worst of the Best Homemade broadcast this week. Another celebrity that I had on this year was, I'm a big Scrubs fan. And if you're familiar with that show, you may know the Todd, who is the best surgeon in the hospital, kind of a meathead guy. And Robert Macchio called in to the show. Me and James Bailey sat down with him, and let's hear a little bit of that. Robert Macchio, the Todd from Scrubs, on the Best of the Worst Homemade Broadcast 2016.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's certainly nice to talk to you. I'm a big fan of Scrubs and some of your other work. You were a stand-up comedian first, weren't you?
You know, back in the day, I spent a good 7 or 8 years doing stand-up in New York. So, but I really was a theater person at first, and I got tired of waiting around to get cast in sort of not-so-great plays. So I would just spend days writing jokes, rehearsing jokes, and then going to open mics and performing them because that's what you did back then. You just went to as many open mics as you could, and eventually I became like an MC and a host. And then, you know, so I always had one foot in two different worlds, the theater world and the stand-up world, I would say.
Are you still active in stand-up?
I never do stand-up anymore, but since Scrubs has come to an end, I've discovered this whole world of Comic-Cons, and I get invited to some of them, mm-hmm. and the closest thing I do to stand-up now is like, basically I have like an hour Q&A when I go to these Comic-Cons, and each day I get an hour, and it's like a dream come true for a comedian because they know who I am. They already have an expectation of who I am in terms of a character. So basically I can slide in and out of that character all night long.
Does that bug you? I'm sure that must be annoying when people come up to you, hey, the Todd. And you're like, no, my name is Rob.
No, man, because I love to slide it in and out all night long.
The Todd's making sex jokes, yes!
See, I mean, I just, you know, I could just go in and out of character all night long. It's just so easy. Can you I get know a... what else I'd like to go in and out of all night long?
Can I get a podcast 5, Todd?
You got to get a podcast 5 for the first sexual innuendo of the evening, you bet.
I love it, man. So what have you been, where are you at? Are you based in L.A.?
You know, I'm originally from New York, but now I live in California. So yes, and I'm staring at the ocean as we speak. It's a beautiful sunset here. My dog's staring at me, saying, "Hey, when are we going to go for a walk? And when are you going to feed me?" So life is good.
What's the comparison? Do you like New York or LA better?
You know, I've always said that it is much better to be out of work in California than to be out of work in New York, because everyone's out of work here, and like, you can walk down to the beach, you can go surfing, swimming, like you can be out. Like if you're out of work in New York, you kind of like hold up in your apartment, and you know, you just sort of like, I feel like when you're young though, because I spent my 20s in New York City and it was such a blast, even though I had no money, but it's a great place to be, New York. But as you get a little older, I think, you know, I like the comfort of being, you know, like here in California, in Santa Monica, California. I'm at the beach, so it's kind of nice. That's my honest answer.
I'm going to jump in here for Rob. Now that you're out in California, you said that you used to do comedy, you do the Q&As. Have you ever thought about getting back on stage, maybe touring a little bit, just having fun with it?
You know what? I think about it all the time. But you know, do you remember the comedian Paul Reiser?
Oh yeah, of course. Had that show. Oh God, why can't I think of the
Mad
show?
Mad About You.
Yeah.
Well, he was, you know, like a contemporary of Jerry Seinfeld. He's mm-hmm. a slightly older guy, had a great sitcom that ran for 9 or 10 years with Helen Hunt. Mm-hmm. And anyway, he was asked recently, he was thinking about it recently. I think Jay Leno said to him, "Why don't you get out there? Why don't you get back out there?" So here's the story. He calls the comedy club manager and he says, "Hey, I'm thinking about, you know, getting back into stand-up. I'd like to go out and come down to your club and go on stage." And he's like, but, you know, he's older now. He's like, so, but the guy says to him, "No, sure, Paul, come on, great. When the show starts at 10. And he says, "At night?" Because he's like, "By 8:30, I got my pajamas on." It's like, "What do you mean? Can they?" He was just like, so as much as I would like to go do stand-up again, you know, if we could do it like from 6:30 to 7:15, you know what I mean? And maybe the people could come to my house instead.
Yeah, just that would be nice. Set up a little stage. You could always go out to Arizona. That's where all the retirees are. Newhart's touring out there.
Oh, God. That's incredible that he still does it. I mean, what a pro.
He's in his 80s?
70s? He's got to be in his mid-80s by now, I'd imagine. He's still out there knocking about.
I think when you get to a certain age, like, for example, Bob Newhart, I'm imagining that going out and doing stand-up and just being out amongst people every night and working your craft, that's the thing that keeps you going. It keeps you alive. It keeps you interested in life.
Oh, most definitely. You know? Yeah, because there's like Joe Paterno, once he retired coaching football, he just dropped dead.
Oh, God. Well, that's a whole separate set of circumstances. Yeah. But you're right. When people stop doing what they do their whole lives, it's like they kind of stop. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. But, you know, I did this Comic-Con in Australia, and I met William Shatner.
Oh, nice. Oh, Shatner's in town here, actually, at the Mahaffey Theater.
I mean, this guy, talk about a guy in his 80s who doesn't stop. I mean, every weekend, this guy has a gig, and it's not like he doesn't have any money. You know, he loves this stuff. Mm-hmm. He loves being busy.
How is he?
A great story about William, huh?
I was going to say, how is he as a person?
I found him to be very nice, very professional, very cordial, you know, he's very kind to me. But the thing with William Shatner, if I understand the story correctly, is that, you know, he used to be that spokesperson for Priceline.com. Mm-hmm. And in the recession, when the recession hit 2007, 2008, Priceline's stock just plummeted to like $1, $2 a share. And they hired him back. And he said, you know what, you could pay me, but you can pay me in stock options. And, you know, when the economy recovered and that company recovered, their share price went to like $1,000 a share.
Oh.
So apparently William Shatner made $500 million.
Whoa.
As a spokesperson for Priceline.com.
Wow.
I mean, that is so crazy. Like the biggest payday of his life happened when he was like 75 years old. Doing a commercial.
Yeah. I guess that you got to get a commercial gig, man. Yeah.
I mean, he has more money than God. So when I see him at a Comic-Con signing autographs, I just think, I know it's not about the money.
He kind of
has to be about whatever that thing is, you know?
Yeah, he kind of seems like a guy who really likes to be around people, and especially people that enjoy him.
Yes.
It feeds him, definitely. I would think so. I would think so for sure.
So, Rob, you had a great run on Scrubs, which is one of my favorite programs of all time. And actually, how we started getting into contact was, I'm humiliated to admit this, but I used to collect autographs when I was younger. And I wrote to you, and you were nice enough to send me one, and I still have it hanging in my bedroom to this day, as
You're
a matter
kidding.
Of fact. No, I still have it.
I can't believe that.
That's how big of a fan I am, I'm telling you. I love that program. But you were nice enough to do it for me. So then I got a LinkedIn request from you, and I was like, that's super weird. And I sent out a Twitter saying, thank you. And then so we started chatting, and that's how you're on this program here today. So
that's amazing.
Yes.
You know something?
It truly
I think
is.
When people first, you must have written to me early in the run of Scrubs.
I was probably.
Like maybe during the first.
Yes, I must have been 14. I'm 30. No, wait. I must have been probably closer to 18 because I'm 31 now.
Okay.
So, yeah, it must have been 30, towards the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
When did Scrubs come on the air?
2003. When people would write to me to that account, I would write, you know, I would sit in the production office because, and I made them make pictures of me because they didn't have headshots of me as the Todd. And every Friday I would sit and I would send them out.
Oh.
But when the show came to an end, I stopped doing that.
So no more. So I got a limited edition, is what you're saying.
Well, now periodically I go to these Comic Cons and people pay for my autograph, which is even worse.
Are you looking to come back down to Tampa anytime soon?
You know what? I've done like two or three Comic Cons a year for the last 3 or 4 years. So I've done like 12 of them, but I've only done them abroad. I've only done them in places that I've wanted to travel to. Like I've been to Australia 3 times, New Zealand. Dublin, Glasgow, London, Vienna. So, like, here's the thing. My parents, you know, they worked their whole lives, and they always said, my parents, like, oh, when we're older, when we retire, then we'll travel. They would always say that. We'll travel. We'll see the world when we get older. But now my parents are, like, 75, and they can't even walk up the hill. They can't even walk across the street.
Right.
And so they're never going to do those things. And I realized, like, just a couple of years ago, I was like, I have an opportunity right now to travel because of this show and like go to places I might like. When else am I ever going to go to New Zealand for free and make a little money? So I started doing some of these Comic Cons more for life experience type stuff than going to, you know, sell autographs. And it's coming to an end, although I do have a couple more this summer. I'm going to go to Dublin again and I'm going to go to Stuttgart, Germany.
Ooh.
But, I never have done a Comic-Con and answered your question in the United States.
That's the crux.
I don't know if I really want to go to Pittsburgh. You know?
Exactly. Or Tampa, for that matter.
Yeah,
I don't necessarily blame you, although we have the best strip clubs in the world, supposedly.
Oh, that's good. You know, you have an accent like almost like
a robot?
Zach Galifianakis.
Oh, thanks. I dig that.
I think he's from North Carolina originally.
Yeah, Florida's kind of this mishmash of everywhere kind of combined into one. So we got a lot of southern people. We got the Northeast is a big influence here. We got a lot of those people. And then James is from Wisconsin. So it's a whole melting pot here in the state of Florida.
If you've seen Making a Murderer, pretty much any time that his parents are talking or the old people are, my family sounds just like that. All the time.
Now I gotta watch. That's the Netflix show, right? Now I gotta watch that show.
Yeah, the one. It's not a bad show. It definitely caused a lot of people to start doing legal research, which is weird. But
yeah, everyone's an attorney now. Yeah. Rob, how did you? You did the stand up. Did you ever have a horror story on stage that you were just like, "Oh my god, I never want to do this again"?
Oh god, I honestly had so many of those, especially in the beginning. I mean, the feeling, I don't know if people who never did stand-up, the feeling of bombing, it's got to be the worst feeling in the world because on the one hand, you could feel it happening physically when they don't laugh after several jokes. And, you know, like I remember getting like cotton mouth and yet red-faced and sweaty at the same time. Like I was just like my body was like shutting down. It was like the worst feeling ever. And then you'd walk off and then like for like you, that feeling would stay with you for like a couple of weeks.
Oh, sure.
I was so thin-skinned compared to most comedians.
So you didn't
you know there's that Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
You weren't, stand-up wasn't your, you kind of just got into stand-up as a tool to get into performing and acting or?
I, after college, went to a 2-year acting conservatory, and I was a triple threat. Sing, dance, and act. The neighborhood play a school of the theater, and I studied acting with Sandy Meisner. And I thought, like, I would do, like, a Neil Simon-type play on Broadway every year and then do the independent film. But it doesn't work that way, you know? And so you take acting classes, you go on auditions, but, like, you never get to perform. So I realized, you know, you have to get in front of an audience. It's like a key ingredient because you have to get feedback and learn how to say a setup and a punchline and then hold for a laugh. And, like, there's that whole craft and skill. And you, in many ways, I felt like I had to become a good stand-up in order to get work as an actor, which is ultimately what happened.
Yeah, that seems to be the course that a lot of comics take. They do it to act. If you're just joining us, we're here with Rob Machio. Rob was one of the performers on the show Scrubs that had a great run. You know, I'm trying to figure out a way to ask this that's not getting too personal. But I think it's every actor's dream to be on a successful television program that goes into syndication.
Just runs forever, and thank God it does.
Yes, and meaning that you get a check every month. So you don't, obviously you don't need to give me the exact amount, but like what can you buy lunches for yourself every day on that money?
Well, the thing is, people think it's like a holy grail, the syndication, but it's really not. It's not, and first of all, Scrubs doesn't run anymore. It only runs on Netflix. So,
oh, really?
The checks have come to an end. I don't mean to dispel your, you know.
This is terrible news. This is breaking my heart right now.
Who do we need to write to get that back on TV?
It's so weird that it didn't syndicate that. Like, it had a nice run. Like, for example, in 2006, Comedy Central bought the rights to it for, like, 3 years, and they ran it, like, 4 times a day.
I spent a lot of days that way. Yeah, I remember. Oh, yeah.
They really ran the heck out of it on Comedy Central for, like, 6 years. And then it ran, it syndicated. But that's why I got to do the Comic-Cons, because it ran around the world. And it ran in all those places I told you, like Australia, New Zealand. It ran in 50 countries around the world. So that's what afforded me the opportunity to go to those places, because those people knew who I was, and they just wanted to high-five me.
There you go, Rob Machio, the Todd, calling in all the way from California on this Best of the Worst Homemade Broadcast 2016. LinkedIn pals, best LinkedIn pals as far as I'm concerned. Finally, I guess one of my favorite people to talk to this year is a college professor. I know, that's kind of, you know, boring, I guess, right? No, not this guy. Thaddeus Russell is a very interesting man. Comedian Jander Gray stopped in to help me out with this interview. Thaddeus Russell, he's been on the Joe Rogan Experience, author of Renegade History of the United States. Great book. Some untold tales there about how America became America. So let's get in with our final Best of the Worst 2016 with my man, Mr. Thaddeus Russell.
So I heard about you on the Joe Rogan podcast, and I picked up your book, and I'm about halfway through it now. I was hoping to finish before you got here, but I am a slow reader. Enjoying it very much so far. It's things that you don't hear about in school. I've never heard about these things in school. I'm college educated and never in a million years heard anything like this. So what was your path to you to write a book like that?
A long one. I went to graduate school in history at Columbia University a long, long time ago, and standard, what's called sort of social historian or new social historian, very left wing. And everyone there was that. There really was no divergence from the party line in any way. And the historical profession generally looked like that. And this was in the 90s. So, this was the new social history or the new way of looking at history had pretty much replaced the old so-called old history or old great man history. So the presidents and senators and generals and inventors who were in the center of the narrative in American history for, you know, about a century have been replaced by sort of this new crop of heroes from the social movements, from the labor movement, from radical movements, from the civil rights movement, feminism, et cetera. They had been put into the center of the narrative. And I came up thinking that I would just continue that and continue to write about these new heroes, people like Martin Luther King and Eugene Debs, who was the head of the Socialist Party, and the great suffragists, et cetera. And I found that there was something missing, or there was a lot missing, in particular, the ways in which ordinary people generally live. And I also found that these new heroes in American history did not look like ordinary people at all. They were extraordinary. And I also found that they were actually quite similar to the old heroes, that if you look at the kind of cultural norms, the social norms followed by Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, and Martin Luther King, and Susan B. Anthony, and Eugene Debs, they're all basically puritanical. That they all sort of believe in the Protestant work ethic. They never talk about sex. They are hostile to popular culture. They are hostile to the ways in which most people lead their lives, the entertainment that were popular among ordinary Americans. Across the board, every single one of them has shared those values. And so that just I'm interested in things that are fun. I'm interested in sex. I'm interested in drinking. I'm interested in, you know, what I'm interested in TV. I'm interested in what, you know, most Americans spend their leisure time doing. And these people weren't. In fact, they were sort of antagonistic to them. So that's where I started. And so I just started looking sort of way below in American history. I started looking below these new heroes as well. And I found that, first of all, Americans for hundreds of years have been pursuing these things that the people in our textbooks didn't like. And then more importantly, I found that by doing so, by breaking social norms, they expanded freedom, or they opened up freedom for the rest of us. So a lot of what we take for granted now in the United States, in the way we live our lives every day, was prohibited either legally or culturally until the people I call renegades came along and simply they decided that they were going to live differently and they were going to break these rules. And so all these taboos were sort of eroded because of that over a period of time, and we're the beneficiaries of it. So that's the basic story.
Yeah, that is pretty fascinating. Do you think that's a kind of a normal trend for kind of the heroes of culture throughout not just American history, but maybe even other cultures? Because you don't really see, I can't really think of anyone throughout history that was open up that would be considered, a kind of cultural hero pushing things forward.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you won't find any.
Yeah.
There's not a single political person, there's not a single anybody, and there's no hero in the textbook.
Well, I mean, who would you say like now is really kind of championing more than just social progress as a hero and also talking about those kind of elements of who we are as people? I mean, who would it be? Well, is it rock stars like John Lennon or something?
Yeah, I mean, it's generally people in popular culture. So the differentiation I like to make is between what I call formal culture, which is, you know, the discourse that comes from politicians and business leaders and school teachers, et cetera, right? That's what I call formal discourse, which is completely sexless, which is completely puritanical, which, promotes the Protestant work ethic and the family and, it's basically silent on sex, and popular culture, which is an entirely different world and within its own norms and values that are usually antagonistic to the formal culture. So that goes all the way back to the founding of the United States, or even prior to the well, pr- prior to the founding of the United States. I mean, when the first white settlers got here, in fact, there was actually literally a civil war between the Puritans in Plymouth Colony and these sort of hedonists in Marymount Colony down the road. The hedonists at the Marymount Colony were interested in dancing and the Maypole, dancing around the Maypole and drinking whiskey and having parties with the Indians. And the Puritans at Plymouth found out about this and launched, formed a militia and marched on Marymount and burned down the Maypole and imprisoned all the leaders of Marymount and kicked the Indians out. So it was kind of the beginning of that long civil yeah. war, which is still going on today.
You talked about the Puritan at the inception of America. I see similarities between that, different, but the way language is policed now. There's this big swing, this pendulum swing with the social justice warrior movement, the super PC movement. I remember, I guess, when I was in high school, there was like a PC push, but now it is so extreme, and I don't know what to do about it. It frankly, it scares me.
Yeah. One of the reasons that I had to become sort of the bad boy in academia and the historical profession is that I found that a lot of these left-wing heroes were puritanical, as I sort of mentioned before. And, you know, it was kind of the beginnings of PC. I mean, Martin Luther King, let's just take him for instance. I mean, almost no one knows that he preached against black working class culture, that he called rock and roll the devil's music. He told black people that they drank too much, that they danced too much, that they were having sex too much, that they were lazy, that they should work hard, that they should be puritanical, that they should be good family members, et cetera. You know, and he's very similar to all the suffragists, all the great feminists. He's very similar to all the labor leaders. He's similar to all the socialist leaders in the United States. They all are puritanical in this way. And so it's not actually that shouldn't be that surprising that their ancestors, their heirs on college campuses and elsewhere speak the same language, the Puritanism has a long, long tradition on the American left. This is not a new thing. There have been a handful of leftists over the last 100 or so years who were anti-Puritanical, but they're few and far between, and they're not actually representative of the left generally. So, you know, where is it going to go? I mean, I don't think they're going to stop people from listening to Miley Cyrus. I don't think they're going to stop people from listening to hip hop. I don't think they're going to stop people from going to movies that have upsetting words in them. You know, the popular culture is thankfully, you know, far more powerful than any professor or undergraduate will ever be.
All right, there you go, Thaddeus Russell. What a 2016 it's been here at the Homemade Broadcast. Thank you very much to everybody who's been on the show. They were all the best, as far as I'm concerned. But they all can't be the best of the worst. Thank you very much for tuning into the Homemade Broadcast this year, right here on Radio St. Pete. And on podcasts, you can go back and listen to all these interviews in their entirety. Some great other folks have been on the show. Thank you very much again to everybody for coming on, spending some time with me, and talking to me, and listening. Those of you listening, I appreciate you very much. Thank you, Radio St. Pete, for letting me share these airwaves with you. And I look forward to hearing and seeing and talking to you in 2017. Will Kuntz, HMB Radio, Radio St. Pete. See ya next year.